101, a version 1 podcast.
Welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations about technology and innovation with some of the UK and Ireland's leaders and trailblazers. My name's Peter Gothard, and I'd like to welcome you back to our podcast. Like many of you, we've been away for a little while as we've got to grips with some of the challenges that have come about as a result of the COVID-19 global pandemic. Well, we're happy to be back in the podcast chair today, though remotely for now. And as things start to return to some degree of normal, at least in our part of the world, it felt apt to welcome as our first guest after our time away, a CTO who is using IoT-based data platforms to actually assist in transitioning workers back into physical office spaces. So welcome, Tim Panagos, CTO of MicroShare. We'll perhaps return to some of the specifics of your part in returning people to work in a little while. But to begin with, I thought it'd be useful to catch up generally on kind of where the industry's up to with IoT, just on a general level. So hi, Tim. How are you today?
I'm great, Peter. Thanks for having me.
It's good to hear and welcome. So IoT, it's arguably, it's been around obviously for, you know, a number of years, but I feel personally like I've not really heard anybody being particularly excited about that trend for a little while. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. When you look back, in reality, IoT has been with us for decades, and the buzzword probably about a decade. But with everything that sort of preceded the internet boom and bust, it generated a hype cycle that I think really failed to deliver. You know, we had analysts, and still do, who routinely predict there'll be, you know, X billion devices by Y year, and Y year has come and gone many times without actually seeing the same volume. And I think that's left the tech world and investors and those that follow those sort of terminology disillusioned, as they probably should be. And I think that's been kind of a detriment to the phrase IoT.
So should we be calling it something else? Should we be almost rebooting it? Should we be talking about it in a different way?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I'm a technologist. I care less about what you label the innovations I'm working on and more how they really impact people's lives, right? Do they make a difference to business? And, you know, we'll let the analysts follow along and put a label to it. You know, I think one of the challenges is IoT is such a broad term in actuality, right? Internet of Things, anything that's internet connected. So that is really runs the gamut from things like, you know, your smart home, Nest thermostat, your smart TV or your smart refrigerator, all the way to, you know, the things they attach to locomotives and the widgets that keep track of how your factory is performing. All of that's under the IoT umbrella. And it's maybe a too broad a term to throw around, to be precise.
Yeah, it's almost like it feels similar to, I guess, a lot of other trends in inverted commas where, you know, cloud was a thing or big data was a thing, but then it got to the point where it's just normal and has become integrated in almost the normal daily IT infrastructure. So it's more about talking about, as you say, what it does as opposed to trying to describe its function.
I think that's right. You know, there, if you go way back in the day, people used to talk about the power of a database and how databases were the next big thing. And indeed they were, but, you know, it very quickly became just table stakes. You just assumed that you were using that kind of technology in your IT infrastructure. And I think that's true of, as you said, cloud and big data and indeed IoT. I think it is creeping into the world, even if, you know, the capital I, capital O, capital T trend maybe hasn't seemed as exciting as it once did.
I do remember though when we were chatting before we sat down today, and you did also describe what you thought of as a cavern between early adopters and the everyday use.
Yeah, this is absolutely true. You know, this is particularly, I think, in the area that we specialize in, which is wireless devices, which is a niche within the IoT space. That basically means you don't have an Ethernet connection to the device that you're attaching. And typically we also extend that to, you don't have a Wi-Fi connection either, since Wi-Fi obviously is wireless, but the bandwidth and technology around Wi-Fi is pretty different to some of these other wireless technologies. And, you know, the notion is that these wireless technologies can deliver some tremendous value, but they're really quite geeky. You know, you have to be a hardware physicist, ham radio operator to really want to wallow in the details of wireless networks, the radio frequencies that are used and the transmission protocols. And I think that the industry has been kind of stuck in that camp of innovating within that technological realm, but doing it in a way that was really inaccessible, I think, to your typical IT person, and frankly, completely unintelligible to business people. And so I think that's the, you know, the chasm that Jeffrey Moore talks about, where you have early adopters in the ecosystem who have use cases that are so compelling that they just block, knock down these walls to adoption and spend the time, take the effort, and then they get these disproportionate awards. But there's this gap in the market that separates them from the rest of the mainstream consumers. And that gap can be insurmountable at times because the rest of the folks may have somewhat compelling use cases. They might have even great use cases, but they don't have the same appetite to innovate, to take risk, to learn. And, you know, they have day jobs, in other words. And so it's really incumbent on the technologists to figure out how to take advantage of the momentum generated by those early adopters in that, you know, exciting phase, which for IoT was really about 10 years ago now. You have to take that momentum and learn how to bridge the gap so that your more typical mainstream consumer can adopt and get benefit without having to know about radio frequencies and, you know, what choices are they making in those scales. So it's really about, I think, democratizing.
Right, okay, democratizing, yeah. And I mean, that's a word which is applied again to sort of think about the pattern and the way that trends develop, you know, democratized data, democratized IT itself. So if this has brought us up to the present, what can you describe what you mean by democratizing IoT in the way that you look at it and the way you do it and kind of what that's bringing to organizations or could bring to organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's everything around the technology obviously needs to be integrated and the rough edges smoothed so that we have interoperability and we've taken what at least can be considered best of breed and merged the bits and pieces together so that you have a continuous solution from device through wireless network to cloud and probably beyond, right, into analytics and presentation. And you can make even somewhat arbitrary choices along that spectrum, but it's important to make a choice and make sure that the integration is completely seamless. And then from there, after the technology, it's all about really building out a business model that makes sense for your target consumers. Do they know how to think about buying something? Can you be clear about what value they'll get? And can you be really quite dedicated to making sure that they actually do get that value? Because that early part of that adoption curve, if the mainstream tries something and they don't see the value, it's really hard to further penetrate because it'll be pretty clear that you're not making progress there. So, you know, that democratization is really getting the technology right 100%, but then really figuring out what is it about the technology that will make it address a business problem and make it palatable to the people who need to deploy it at scale, right? So it's no longer a science project. It is something that a business owner can, you know, come to depend on and indeed kind of fades into the background. It's no longer a line item in their minds. It's just part of the backdrop of how they do
sure.
business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if we contextualize that maybe in the runoff from the global pandemic and I know that one of the things that you specialize in thinking about and dealing with is this idea of how people use spaces and how you can help people better use or interact with their workspaces or other spaces. What sort of things have you been getting up to really in terms of helping people transition back?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have been really pioneering the use of these wireless sensors in this democratized way in space utilization, which means, you know, any place people congregate is a space. So we have everything from, you know, hospitals and office buildings to, you know, large estates, corporate campuses, airports. All of these things have the need to be managed. And the thing that I think differentiates them from a smart home, for instance, which frankly I think has been a bit lackluster in terms of the IoT space, is they're bigger than any one human can easily conceptualize at one time, right? They're large scale. So I can't just walk around and manage my corporate campus. I'd spend all day walking and no time working. And so what has happened in the pandemic, I think, is it's made even spaces that otherwise would have been managed by walking around a challenge for that kind of mode of operation, because people are increasingly remote and distant from their spaces. And it's really changed the intuition and I think really experience of how to manage because, you know, the world has been disrupted from that perspective. How we use space is absolutely at the core of what the quarantine has done to us.
Sure. So I guess for sort of physical examples, how are you using the technology to actually improve that? Like, you know, if somebody walks into a space that you guys have been working with, what can they expect to see kind of as they come in the morning?
Yeah. So what we're working with is really kind of a short-term, long-term, mid-term strategy with our customers. The short-term is really things that are intended to allow people to get back to work with the idea of pervasive well-being. There are obviously risks involved in congregating at all. So how do we help people manage that risk and achieve a balance between productivity and employee safety? And that's with things like universal contact tracing, with occupancy and cleaning tools. We find that the public is very much interested in having visible cleaning. They feel that clean equals safe. And so, you know, facilities managers being asked to do more cleaning with less staff, and that's been a real challenge, and they need to be visible. So, you know, just putting tools in place that allow somebody to measure where people really are using space, collect feedback. Hey, this bathroom is dirty. This conference room has been used. That kind of information feeding back into the facilities management teams can really help them do more with less in terms of providing a clean environment. And then contact tracing is, you know, maybe the bell of the ball these days, which is really helping people with respect to privacy to be able to manage how they are interacting with individuals throughout their workday, so that if there is the incidence of disease, that it can be traced back and proper steps can be taken to minimize spread. So that's the short term. Midterm, I think we'll see more of how do people want to redesign their environments to suit the new world better, because I think we will see an ongoing need for people to be made comfortable that wellness is a top priority for employers. I also think that people will continue to work from home at a level that was unprecedented previously. And I also think that people will begin to recognize that large centralized corporate environments may be too expensive, too risky, and look to sort of decentralize some of the way their employees contribute to the company. And so that's going to distribute the working environment, which will make it harder for people to manage centrally by walking around. It's going to put even more emphasis on this idea of, you know, remote measurement and using the telematics that come from that with analytics to make it possible to bring into focus for the human mind, what's really going on in these large distributed environments. And I think that that plays really well into what we're doing. And over the really long term, you know, people are going to look to want to save money and optimize and ensure safety. And the, all of these are long-term strategies that people want to be able to stay on top of. And so it's both helping companies get there dependably. And then once they're there, I think IoT and analytics around space management will just fade back into the background and just be part of that bedrock of management that you can start taking for granted. And I think all that needs, you know, remote management, it needs cloud, it needs big data, you know, all of the above, but not so much that you'll know you're using IoT, more that you'll have confidence that you're managing your space well.
That's really interesting. And I think I agree with you. It seems obvious from speaking to, you know, actual employees up to sort of experts in various fields that it does seem like, you know, everyone's talking about this new normal or this next normal, but I think everyone seems to agree things are going to change forever. I feel like there's a bit of an elephant in the room with this conversation. When I think of phrases like telematics or optimization or saving money or remote management, I guess we have to start thinking about the way people feel about feeling tracked as they walk around spaces and the data being collected about their movements, their where they are, what they're doing. Are they being watched? Do they feel, you know, do they feel remotely managed by a weird corporate overlord that they never see, you know, who may be in some pile in the countryside, you know? Are you sort of tackling the, I won't say ethical side of it because that's a bit touchy-feely, but, you know, just the general idea of people's data, where that sits, how they can be sure that, you know, they're still sort of not just slaves to this corporate data entity.
Yeah, this is, I think, a hot topic right now, particularly for things like contact tracing, which have come out with an immediate early push because there's an obvious public good in helping to ensure wellness by reducing spread of infection, right? But at the same time, people have reacted quite viscerally to the, like you said, the big brother tracking and what's going to be done with this data. And I think quite rightly so. Having worked in IoT for some time, I can tell you that I find it unnerving just how pervasive surveillance has become in various ways. And it's very hard for a consumer or employee, you know, average citizen to know what is being recorded about them, who is using it, who's storing it. And so it does become a bit of a specter that weighs on people's minds. And in some cases, they're absolutely justified in their being unnerved because indeed there are things that are happening that are questionable. But so it's been very much part of our founding was to deal head on with that problem and to look at data privacy as being really core to what we do. So my company is called MicroShare. And the notion behind that is that we ought to be able to engage individuals in an ecosystem that gives them both visibility and control around the data that's collected about them and how it's being used by whom and in what circumstances. And also to participate potentially in the value creation that comes from the data. Because what's clear to me is that, you know, COVID is just a current example of societal value being derived from data. I think there's no end to the amount of societal value that will come from being data driven. And the downside of these public backlash, which I think are justified, is that they will tend to legislate against the public good, which is being able to use this data in ways that make better use of the resources we have as a species, as a planet, while balancing well-being and comfort. And I think that's a data problem. So what I want to be able to do as a technologist is collect data and then share that data as broadly as possible so that people can use it to make better decisions. But at the same time, I don't want to sacrifice the individual and their freedoms and their comfort in that they are part of the measured equation. And so we've really built in this idea that every piece of data collected from an IoT device in Microshare has the ability to have more than one owner, which means if I'm measuring you, you're wearing a contact tracing bracelet, Peter, then not only will your employer have a stake in the data about that contact tracing because they put the wristband on you and they're paying for the system, but you will also be a co-owner of the data from your wristband. And what that gives you is unique ability to see what's going on, what data was collected about you, and then have some knobs and dials to turn that says, your policy is, I will allow this data to be used for the purpose of contact tracing. I won't allow it to be used for the purpose of clocking in and clocking out, tracking my time at work, or tracking my associations during break times. Those give you the ability to see it and then control it. And I think if people had visibility into what the data is and how it's being collected, they realize that in most cases it's not threatening, and that they can participate in that as a more educated participant in the ecosystem, and then hopefully let the ecosystem continue to develop in an ethical path.
That's all incredibly interesting and sounds great. You know, if I was going into a new company and I was immediately told, you've got a stake in this data, you can choose what's done with this data, I suppose if I was playing devil's advocate, I'd ask, are these sort of suggestions you'll give to your clients when you're installing this stuff, and they can quite easily ignore it or override it with an HR policy, which, you know, might stop an employee having any of that insight. There's already famous tropes in businesses where, for example, it turns out that anything you ever did on corporate email sent or received can be just hacked into and looked at by the company, you know, and it turns out none of that was sacred. Are you sort of having those higher level sort of philosophical governance conversations with your clients as well as offering these features?
You are, and you're right. You know, any kind of marketplace or ecosystem mm-hmm. depends to some degree that the participants are acting in good faith. And you will always have situations where people aren't acting in good faith. And so that's always a risk. And perhaps that's where, you know, consumer opinion, employee opinion, and visibility to those sort of transgressions becomes more important, right? It's the social policing, I think, that helps provide a backdrop to that. But I will say that, you know, right now it's very new to even think about this as a possibility, because indeed the way most companies have been told they're meant to manage data is kind of in the opposite direction, that you're not meant to positively ascribe this piece of data to Peter. You're meant to scrub it so that there's no trace that Peter is involved in this particular transaction. And indeed, I think you see that some of the legislation is pushing people towards these privacy through anonymity. And I think any data scientist will tell you that de-anonymization is a lot easier than the public has been led to believe. And so I really think that in the long run, that's not going to continue to be a good way to manage your privacy. And will this be a better way to manage privacy? I don't know. The jury is still very much out. And as you point out, it's cultural, even more than it is technological. Yeah, you need the technological underpinning to make it possible, but we need the people who are part of the ecosystem, both the employers and the employees, to say, you know what, this makes sense to us. So, you know, we're talking to people like public unions to say, hey, you know, data can be managed differently. And it's in the best interest of your members to participate. We're talking to employers and saying, you're not doing anything evil with this information. You're trying to manage your business. And in the long run, a healthy business helps the employees. And if they had better visibility, there would be less conjecture and perhaps less turbulence. And, you know, we're asking people ultimately that to buy into a different way of doing business that way. And I think some companies are just culturally closer to that idea than others. But in the end, it will be up to the market to decide.
Yeah. I think, you know, you made some excellent points there that I'm really enjoying thinking about now, because it's almost like if you do just discourage the exploration of ideas such as, you know, transparent data logging, you do end up just driving these things underground.
That's right.
Because someone's still going to be collecting it, but they're not going to be using it in honest, transparent ways. And I could start harping on about blockchain and all kinds of things at this point.
Sure.
I won't bother because Everybody knows a lot about that already. But I think that's, you know, it's a good point. It's a sort of point that people like Tim Berners-Lee have been raising for, you know, years now, that if we nail this way to just have everyone's data completely accessible all the time, there'll be no more problems because it'll all be there. So I to apologize for my earlier grilling, I absolutely think this is a fantastic way to get on, as you say as well, so early in the game and actually try to normalize this idea.
Oh, I think if it can't stand up to scrutiny, then it deserves to be challenged and discarded, because I really do think that we as a society need to recognize two things. One is that the value of driving businesses through data, and indeed, not just businesses, you know, governments, any kind of organization, driving them through data is so beneficial that we'd be fooling ourselves to say that we'd stop anybody from doing it. So when you make it so that the organization could ostensibly not use information to drive their business, they will find a way to circumvent whatever the requirements are and drive it underground, as you said. And I think that is an encouragement to malfeasance, as opposed to being able to shine the public light to have employees and unions and legislators have clear visibility to what's being done. I think that would encourage businesses to be the good actors that I think they want to be in general. And the second, I think, is that we need to give people control and the responsibility to be educated participants in the ecosystem, right? To be contributors of data, to be consumers of data, and not to think of it as something that's remote or sterile, but actually is something that they need to worry about on a continual basis. But maybe not worry about it the same way they're worried about catching a disease, for instance. But indeed, you know, it's just part of 21st century citizenship, like voting, perhaps. Need not be any more alarming than that.
That's the thing, that the difference between worry, alarm, and the sort of acknowledgement, and I guess it's about shifting between those places. We're running a little low on time now, but because it's been just fascinating. But I just wondered kind of to lead us out almost, you know, you've probably been working with quite a lot of organizations on their sort of return to work policies and plans. I just wondered if I said to you, what are your sort of top three tips you could give to a company that's about to reopen its doors in terms of the way it is going to sort of facilitate for people returning? What sort of wisdom would you pass on to them?
That's a great, challenging question to close things out. Let's see, top three. I think the number one is to be prepared for the scale of the challenge that you're about to face. I see some companies who have been perhaps a little optimistic about what it's going to be like to manage 1,000, 10,000, 20,000 employees returning to a space, and the infrastructure and the people and the technology necessary to keep them all safe can be significant. So, you know, worry about the scale, I think, is important. Number two, I think, is be open with your staff about what you're doing, whatever it is you're doing, whether you're collecting data or not collecting data. I think visibility is one of those key items that make it better. So it's almost a change management problem, even more than it is a technological one, whether you're doing contact tracing or some kind of monitoring or not, you know, being clear, this is what's happening, this is what we're doing, here's how we're managing the situation, I think goes a long way. And then thirdly, I would say that you shouldn't be afraid to experiment. And maybe this is the hardest of these pills to swallow for an employer. There isn't an established playbook that is known to work. And if you just take these steps, everything will be okay. There isn't anyone in the world I've come across who really understands the complete path of what's happening because it's unprecedented. So if you've got the scale right, you're prepared for it, and you're being open with the people around you, I think you can create an environment in which it's okay to try new things, and it's okay to fail and correct them, and always doing it with the spirit of improving the balance between well-being and productivity for the business. I think that will go a long way.
Thank you very much for that. Well, I think that's all we do have time for today. Tim, thank you very much. It genuinely sounds like the IoT is in safe hands as we move forward into the next phase of its existence. You've been listening to the 101 podcast. I've been Peter Gothard, and I've been talking to Tim Panagos, CTO of MicroShare. To find more editions of the 101 podcast, please visit version1.com. Thanks for listening, stay safe and be well, and I'll see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.